This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3021 for Monday, the 2nd of March, 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for February 2020. And is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 55 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, call for shows is open. Ken and eventually Dave discussed the shows, media and development plans.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, the HPR Community News for February 2020. Before we begin, I want to tell you that there is a call for shows at the moment. The queue is very low and we need people to send in shows. As you may or may not know, Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast network, and even though you hear familiar voices from time to time, that doesn't mean that you're not supposed to be sending in shows. You are, in fact, you're supposed to be becoming a familiar voice here on the network. If you have never sent in a show at all, now would be an excellent time for you to introduce yourself to the community so that we know who you are and that we can fill up the queue. So, unfortunately, Dave is around, but he's having some connecting issues, and therefore I am going to do this myself. And at this point, Dave would normally introduce the new host. So there is a new host this month, and that is Monochromic. And we would welcome you to our network. Thank you very much. So this, as I said, is the Community News Show, where we give you a summary of the things that we've been getting up to in the last month. And we use this as an opportunity to go back and have a look at all the shows, so that all the shows get some love, and we can go through the comments. So the first show that we're going to be talking about is 3001, which was the community news for January 2020. And we mustn't have said anything very important because there was no comments in that show. The next day was the World of Commodore Episode 8, A Vote of Thanks, and Windigo says, thanks for the series. Found all of the World of Commodore episodes you submitted to be very enjoyable. I don't have much experience with Commodores or that era of computing, and hearing that the community is currently able to achieve is fascinating. Thanks for a wonderful series. And I think that echoes my sentiments as well on that show. And so, speaking of series, the following was New Year Show Part 4, put up by Kevin Wisher. And in this one, we had, you random taking over. And a pathetic explanation as to where our missing episode is from the book club. Not looking at you, Pokey. And Pokey wrote, Dark Reader, thanks for the recommendation for Dark Reader. It's really great. I just wish it would work on all the about pages too. Really shocking when you suddenly get hit by the brightness. So what he's referring to there is one of the tips they had where you can theme every web page, and Dark Reader was one of those things. So the next day was our own Dave Morris, fixing simple audio problems with Audacity. And this is actually a interesting one. It isn't, as ever, Dave has nice show notes in there, complete full show notes. But he basically does noise reduction, high pass filter, amplification, and truncate silence. Basically, if you're doing this on Audacity, you're pretty much doing 99% of what the mere mortals here on HPR do. So this is a very good one to listen to. So Ahuka continued the following day with Is Activity Pub Paving the Way to Web 3.0? And this is the conference that he's reviewing, held in Prague. And yeah, I thought this was quite interesting from a this whole semantic web point of view. So that was pretty cool. And I am enjoying the series as ever. The following day, it was Operator with a show that hijacking the auxiliary input of your car. Very complicated and convoluted show. Well, it was really great to listen to, taking back ownership of your car and basically how to wire in. I don't have a car, so I did in days of yore, but no, not anymore. But I can completely understand how something could be extremely frustrating. But he's had a good, this is in the true sense of hacking a system to make it do what you want. So shout outs to him. No comments on that episode either. And also no comments on Photography 101 the following day by Paul Cork, where Paul, sorry, a bit of a cough. And Paul goes through the, really basics of photography. And I found this fascinating to listen to. And not just from the point of view of explaining basic things like what focal length is and f-stops and stuff like that are, but also giving tips on, you know, as a starter, if you're starting off in the hobby, this is basically all you need to do. Set it like this, and then you can develop from there. So, great episode. And there are more of these, and I am looking forward to more of them. You might think it a bit odd to be doing photography on a radio, essentially an audio medium like HPR, but no, it works. It worked great. And episode 5 of the New Year show, and is lots of war stories. Norris says, these two guys should get together more often. What fun wandering conversation from two interesting people. Someone should get these two together on a regular basis, or they could start their own HPR series. Interesting listening. I could not agree more, and there is a HPR channel on Mumble. Details are on the HPR website as to how you're going to do that. So if you two guys want to get together, I personally would enjoy listening to even more of this. Great stuff. I must say, I really enjoyed the topics on the New Year show this year. It was very little repetition of the same stuff and interesting topics the whole way. Great stuff. Then we had Linux In-Laws Season 1, Episode 1. It's a podcast about on topics on free and open source software. So there's a there's mailing discussions about this, but I had the comments, which we'll discuss later. I put in the comment, they mentioned about setting up a Mumble server, and as I just wanted to point out again that we have a Mumble server, HPR has a Mumble server for the greater podcasting community, and it's on ch1.teamspeak.cc and port 64747. So ch1.teamspeak.cc, port 64747. And in there you can simply create your own room and record your own shows, so making this a lot easier all around. Peter Mortensen said, the predecessor Linux In-Laws, ha 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 ha, the successor to Linux Outlaws 2017 to 2014, and en.wikipedia.org Linux wikis Linux underscore Outlaws. How many will get that reference nearly 6 years later? All the listeners for which the closing of Linux Outlaws left a gaping hole in the podcast landscape. And then Chris says, Linux In-Laws at Peter, all will be revealed in a future episode soon. Stay tuned. Then the following day was a show by Andrew Conway, FOSDEM First Impressions, which I found interesting, not just from the point of view that Andrew and I were there together, but it was his first, it reminded me of my first impressions to FOSDEM, and it was a very good episode, and I'm going to send this on to the FOSDEM organizers so that they can have a listen to this. Operator again, this time Linux is Hard, a rant with Intel Graphics, where he's going over his some very good tips about GPU and CPU information. Not 100% sure how much use this would be, but stuff like HDD temperature will tell you the temperature of your drives, the different types of system info that you can have, LSPCI. Basically, he's got a whole range of useful debugging information that people are going to be wanting to know. Have you tried this? Have you tried this when you're debugging hardware issues, actually? So the following day, we have a sample episode from some people I met at FOSTEM, Wikipedia Podden, which is a Swedish language podcast about Wikipedia. They occasionally do English language summaries, so I spoke to them about getting some, you know, basically putting them onto the Free Culture podcast page, and they have done that. So that's great. Bash Tips 21, Environmental Variables. And I see Dave here has gone back and unrenamed it from Bash Anado. So I'm amazed that that survived as long as it did. And this one was environmental variables. And Dave seemed to think that environmental variables are a thing of the past. But as it turns out, they're exceptionally hip and trendy now in the Docker and Kubernetes sort of arena. So that is how you're supposed to pass in all your variables. And so CRVS writes, "And so that's how you use shebangs. After all these years, I finally understood how you write your bash scripts. Thank you." Dave replied, writing awk scripts. Glad the episode was useful. In case you missed it, there's a series called Learning Awk on HPR, which you can find it there, series 94. This has been restructured for publication on opensource.com. Those. The next day was another popular one, kind of struck a note there, was a headless Raspberry Pi streaming server for playing music under John's pillow without disturbing his better half. And basically John goes through the steps of doing that. Be Easy said that he's going to be trying this tonight. Thanks for the show. I will be trying out MPEG-123 on one of my Pis tonight. John replies, still streaming with URL update. Thanks for the comment. I hope the Pi plus MPEG-123 suits your needs. Mine is working perfectly after about a month, though I had to update the URL of one of the streams. I love my Pi radio. Dave, I can Dave. Dave has just joined the channel.
That just took me forever to set my damn laptop up to do this because my desktop is not playing ball at all tonight.
I'm not 100% sure, Dave, that I've pressed push to talk for each of these segments, so there may be some that we have skipped over.
Do you know, I've done this. When I've recorded on my own, I've forgotten to do this, and I had to go back and start all over again. So it's not just me being a silly old fart. That's good.
No, that's at all, no.
Okay. Well, Do you want to continue? Whereabouts are you?
I'm at John Culp's episode 3014, and I'm reading, I've just done comment 2. Is this the laptop that you won at OddCamp?
It is. But it's only got one screen. Why didn't I get one with two screens? I'm not used to I usually got two monitors, and I've got some stuff on one and some stuff on the other. I'm having a hell of a job jumping around finding where everything is. So I don't even know where John Culp's episode is.
I sent you a link.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll continue reading on. Beezy says, there's an issue with MPG-123. I tried MPEG-123 with a remote stream and found the following problem on Ubuntu 19.10. The URL must start with HTTP and not HTTPS, or else it looks to play a local file and you get an error. File access error code 22. If the stream redirects HTTP to HTTPS, your stream should play. If it doesn't, you may be out of luck. For instance, I pick a random podcast on iTunes and it fails to redirect. On the other hand, using a file from HPR works just fine.
Okay, I'm caught up, I think. Yeah, so John says HTTP, not HTTPS. You're right. I found the same thing, but forgot to mention it in either the recording or the show notes. So far, all of the streams I've listened to work with the HTTP prefix, though. I seem to recall that command line VLC, CVLC, can play streams with HTTPS, but I may be wrong. I'm on my phone at the moment and can't verify.
So that was that. And then the following day, we have ActivityPub Conference, the Schematical Social Network. I've just mixed up the comments for the shows here because I was saying his previous ActivityPub was the Semantic Web one, which I am a particular fan of, the Semantic Web.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, as usual with the Hooker's things, I really need to go and dig deeper because it's got so many brilliant links here. And I listen to them, leave them and think, oh yeah, let's go and check. And of course I don't, by the time I get to this, I've not got to it yet. So anyway, but these are a great resource. So it's my fault, not the Hooker's.
Not at all, you can always go back. So the following day, a Nixie Tube Clock and Friends, again, operator coming in, saving the day. And this looked like a very nice little kit to put together. Not one that I would recommend for starters by any stretch of the imagination, because these things require some fairly serious voltages to get them to work.
Yeah, yeah, it looks a beautiful thing. About 40 something pounds, but of course it's USA only, to ship it to the UK would be astronomically expensive. But wow, I was drooling when I saw this. It looks really
nice. Me too.
Very. It looks old school stuff. I really like this.
He was lucky to have somebody local who could help him out with the troubleshooting the issues as well.
It's definitely not a thing to learn on, as you said. And the whole business about lead-free solder. Who on earth has spread the word that lead-free is the thing to use? I know people are getting worked up about the lead, but it's such lead-free stuff. It's so dreadful. It doesn't flow. It doesn't stick. It's an awful, awful product. I had some, threw it away.
So the following day was the second in what probably will be a series on photography by Paul, developing black and white film. This was more a soundscape than anything else, but it was really interesting to follow along.
Yes, yes, it was. I like the way he did this with all the ambient sounds and stuff. That was great. I thought I was tracking along with him there. And he's using one of these Patterson film tanks, which it's got a spiral in it that you feed film into in the dark, and then it ratchets and moves the film around. I have one, though. Unlike Paul, I must admit that I bought it and I never used it. I was going to try and develop color slide film, whatever you call that, reversal, which is very, very hard to do. So I was always too nervous to do it. So I never got to it. I did lots of practice with film loading and all that stuff. He was saying that he wished he'd bought I think they call them a changing bag. It's a black fabric bag with two sleeves in it, which you unzip and put the film and everything in, and then you put your arms down the sleeves, and so you can work in ordinary light, and then do everything inside this bag. I have one of these. It's a rather wonderful thing, but I've practiced with it so many times I've never actually developed it. So. I'm in awe of the fact that Paul's doing this.
Some of those photos are very good, actually, on this site there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excellent. This is a great great series, if that's what it's going to turn into.
So the following day, we had Encrypted Edit by Tlatu, who does password store and basically some scripts to use GNU Privacy Guard to take some files and basically decrypt them to RAM. I thought this was interesting, but I'm wondering why he just doesn't use something like KeyPassX or KeyPassXC, which I've taken to using.
Well, yeah, I know. I do this. I use CPass X for everything, sharing the database between systems is a thing you should really do. I haven't quite got myself coordinated enough with it, but I know. I was intrigued as to why he was where he was.
I think you may have explained it way back when he did the first of these, but I can't for the life of me remember why.
I did like his explanation of doing this encryption, decryption, editing stuff, and potentially leaving debris all over the place, which would be traceable if anybody got hold of your machine and did forensics on it. Which, you know, that's a very significant thought if you are, you know, taking your laptop through customs and people are wanting to poke around with it and stuff.
And I was kind of wondering why then would you roll your own solution? Because, you know, if you get a solution from guys who are developing us, you know, with more experience and more eyes, developing your own solution might not be the best approach.
I know. Intriguing, though. I went from listening to this to quick look to see if there was a Vim plugin. I know Klaatu would be disgusted at the thought of using Vim to do this, but no, he probably would. There's a Vim GNU PG, and it's a plugin that where you can edit a file and encrypt it, create a file and encrypt it through it, or open up an already encrypted one. And you can encrypt it in multiple keys, so you can make a list of who you want it to be viewable by. So that seemed to me quite a nice thing. I'll probably actually use that from time to time when I need to share files with whoever.
Yeah, actually, that don't be a bad idea.
Yeah, it looks quite good. It's not the most wonderfully put together plugin. It's a little bit clunky, but still, it seems to do the job.
Okay, moving on. The following day, we had Linux In-Laws Episode 2, rundown from Foster. And there were no comments on that one as yet. So, validating data in Haskell for the hardcore out there. There were a few Haskell people around Boston, and I made sure to drop this series to anybody I met. So he took a different approach in the show, basically, rather than going too in-depth into the code itself. He basically gave us some explanations around it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought that was good. I didn't do what I usually try and do and listen while reading his notes, because his notes were always very comprehensive. So I'm a little bit at a loss with this one at the moment, but I will catch up.
So other comments that we missed was on Daniel Pearson's show, SQRL, Secure Quick Reliable Login. And in the community news, we had asked Ahuka to give us some feedback, and he has done so, saying, "Thanks for a very good presentation on this exciting protocol. I hope this does get taken up by major sites. The old username password stuff is not nearly secure enough, and this could be a major upgrade."
Yeah, cool. Paul Quirk did show 3000 for us with the Shokan 3 project, and Ahuka commented on this. He said, "I love this. I previously supported a similar effort by Kimiko Ishizaka to record royalty-free versions of Bach. We need more of this free. We need more free culture." Can't but agree with that.
And McNallu also agrees. "Great," says he. "Excellent show. Love Chopin." Don't know what sort of accent that was supposed to be.
You must have been studying the way the man speaks at Potsdam. That's all I can say. I'm getting it wrong. Sorry, and it's very
indeed. Yeah.
Trying
indeed.
Your best.
So let's mosey over to the mailing list. It's been a busy little week. I sent off the I Love Free Software. Somebody spammed me, but it's fine. This one was about sending off a letter of thanks to developers on Valentine's Day, which is kind of pretty cool. And if you've missed it, don't worry. You can continue. You can fire off an email. Something you should do from time to time.
There was a fair amount of activity on that subject on the Fediverse, I noticed, on Mastodon. Yep. So it was didn't go. It wasn't ignored in general world. A great idea, I thought.
So I want to read the next one. It was about HPR 3009, which was, hello, fellow members of HPR community. I'm writing today because I'm concerned about episode 3009, which seems to me like a clear case of syndication. First in the title, Linux Outlaws Season 1, Episode 1, and the fact that there is no mention of HPR at all in the show. I had a discussion with Ken about this, and I understand that the circumstances to justify the presence of the show on HPR, but I am concerned that this kind of episode doesn't really belong, at least in this form, here. With another title and proper acknowledgement and recording, it would be fine. I'm curious to know what the rest of the community thinks, as I'm pretty sure I cannot be the only one who feels this way. And then I replied to that saying, Yannick, first, thanks for getting in touch, and then sending this to the list for review, because I'd asked me to do that. It is important that our community questions the decisions of the janitors. HPR is entirely community-driven. Policy decisions and proposals are discussed in the mailing list. So I put a link into there. At the time, I checked their site, which was empty, and I also checked the license, which is Creative Commons. Therefore, it was safe to post it as a sample show. I also sent them the email below, which I asked them about, are you planning and hosting your own podcast and stuff? When I was at the stand at FOSDEM, I spoke to Chris, and it became clear that their website and feed was not active, so they're posting them exclusively on HPR, so we're bootstrapping the show for them. Once they have everything ready, they will move on to their own feeds and become fellow show members of Free Culture Podcast. Precedence for this was Linux in the Shell and Sigflup with Uberlite Hacker Force Radio, which actually was a spoof, if I recall. And it falls under dedicated sharing knowledge. So Honky replied saying, as a person whose podcast Linux Lugcast had several appearances on HPR, I am all for using HPR as a springboard to spread the word about other podcasts, and believe that as long as the subject matter of the podcast is of interest to hackers, it meets the criteria. Yannick says, I guess I expected a little bit more recognition towards HPR for the help in launching the project. HPR is about sharing, and the field is more about using than sharing, because if as long as the subject matter is of interest to hackers is enough, then why not do plain syndication of stuff that's are of interest? And that one went, ah, yes, to which I replied back in, we covered this back in 2012, November of, and at the time we had one day dedicated to a syndicated show, Syndicated Thursdays, as you might remember, Dave. And then stuff started to pick up, and then we didn't have any more slots available, and we were basically posting syndicated content, and basically we kind of got a lot of grief from people, because why are you posting their shows when you're not posting my shows and stuff like that. So basically we then went to, we're only producing stuff for HPR, and if it's Creative Commons stuff, we will publish it. Yeah, and we'll put in a sample episode. So that's pretty much how it goes. I'm not really sure what the Linux in-laws are going to do. I thought that they had said that they were going to move to their own feeds, but their website is now up, but it seems like they're going to continue posting them on HPR. I'm not really sure.
No, they did seem to imply that in the second show that they would like to continue posting via HPR, but I'm not quite sure that they appreciate the ins and outs of that decision.
Yeah, well, from a physical point of view, they won't be able to determine when the shows come out, because as I put out a call for shows already, everybody listening to this episode will be busy uploading shows, and we will have a flood of shows for the next 3 months. People, I'm looking at you, yes. And therefore, simply being able to pick a day, 2 weeks' time, and then expecting your show to come out might not work. So there you go. Shall I read what Taj said? Do you want to read what Taj said?
Yeah, sure. Touch says, I share the same ideas as several of the previous posters. As someone who has definitely bootstrapped a podcast from HPR, and it's, I think, some amount of syndication is a valuable tool. More than a couple of the free culture podcasts out there have done the same thing, to either get established or get some promotion. As far as syndicating the episodes of another podcast, I also don't really mind it. I do think there should be at least some limit to the number of episodes over a period of time. In the past, I think this has been handled well. If a podcast is wanting to post episodes more regularly and establish time limit, we as a community should help them establish their own hosting feed. For example, YouRandoms and my podcast site and feed cost less than $1 a month, and I'm sure we'd be more than happy to help anyone set up the same situation. I think there's a way to support new podcasts being initially created, you know, using HPR and then using the community to help them become self-sufficient. So, yeah, the word incubator, just this is me talking, sort of came into my head as I was reading that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the email. As far as attributing and acknowledging HPR, while I think it's a nice gesture that's appreciated, I would not categorize it as necessary, just my two cents.
And Nigel Biza said, obviously, there are no prizes for guessing the inspiration of this new podcast. Viewed in isolation, I'm quite happy to give this new podcast a listen, and as a means of getting its existence publicized, HPR is probably a valid medium. The fact that we are discussing it now proves that the principle works. All the same, I think the correct method would be to use the HPR show as a container with introductory content by the producers in addition to the podcast itself. It seems to recall at least one precedent for this approach. I would not object to HPR being used this way for first editions of new tech-related podcasts. However, if the same approach is attempted for future episodes, then I think it should be resisted. Otherwise, HPR will run the risk of becoming hijacked as a distribution medium. And that actually thank you, Nigel and Biza, and that is actually what I'm concerned about most.
Yeah, good point.
Because if five people do that, and if 10 people decide to release the shows and do that, and release every 2 weeks, then that's, the queue is full. And I think we then would be better moving people to Hacker Media, or and they had the podcast incubator.org at one stage, which was exactly this, to help people get their podcasts up and running. But I'll fire off an email and see what the guys intend to do.
Yeah.
Do you want to finish off what
Brian was saying? Is that the one you mean?
Yeah, that's the one, Brian. Yeah.
Yeah. I do not feel a need to mention HPR within an episode. There is an intro and outro. As Ken pointed out, it was exclusive and Creative Commons.
Yeah. So it does definitely meet the rules, but my concern with it is not that it's not necessarily that they're posting the stuff. It's that it might generate bad feeling among other podcasters who would feel like if they had released their own shows via HPR, they would have got an instant audience of a few thousand people, rather than having to grow your own. So, having to deal with that here as the admin or as the janitor is the issue that I'm a little bit concerned with. So I think the approach of, if there's Creative Commons new Creative Commons podcasts, absolutely we want to hear about them, and you post them, and then between the HPR intro and outro, you hear their podcast, that's it. We have had Linux in the Shell in the past, but truth be told, Dan did discuss that with us here at HPR prior to that, and it was discussed on the mail list, and it was a community decision, if I recall. I can't remember correctly, but Dan definitely had posted lots of shows to HPR and was a founding member of Hacker Public Radio from the linuxinks.net anyway. So him and his daughter were even hosting their Josh had their own domain name was run on the HPR server, so that was a little bit different. But yeah, okay, we'll see how it pans out. So we had HPR and social media. Shall I read it? I suppose.
Go for it.
I wrote it. I'll read it. Hi all. At FOSTEM, we put a chat group together to more effectively communicate with the participants there. The group then expanded to cover some who are following along at home. Say hello, Dave.
It was great. It was almost like I was there.
It was actually quite cool because we were asking, Dave, is it busy over there?
It was, yeah. I think I might have watched more at the time that things were going on. I might have watched more talks and stuff than you guys, because I was hopping about through the streams and watching things. And I did actually see there was one at the end of one talk, saw people signing up to leave, and there was JWP heading out. So it felt like I was there, you know, except you didn't wait. Cool.
Well, you saw more of the shows than I did, the talks than I did. So I'll continue. Since there is a bit of discussion as to a more free type of communication channel, so Ahuka's episode 108, sorry about this, I'm on off. Our almost host, Marshall, almost put up a Snicket server. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
And some of the other FOSTEMers are testing a HPR general chat channel there. It is a new XMPP server based off the Prodigy code. The main benefits is right now its ability to work across multiple devices. You can start to chat on your phone and sync across all clients that are signed in the account. Registration is on FOSTChat. Oh, very good. FOSCH.AT. See what you did there? Is currently closed at the moment, but you can connect to generalgroups.chat.foschat using your XMPP ID while we figure out how to do registration. And I'm going to say your thoughts on this in particular and HPR on social media in general would appreciate. Do you want to take the next by John Spriggs?
Yep. It just takes me a while to click through.
Come on, Dave!
Yeah, this laptop, it's so slow. Oh, sad I bought it now. Anyway, John Three says, before hosting something new, have you considered using matrix.org? It's an IM project which is managed and maintained, was recently adopted by Mozilla to replace their IRC network, and previously was adopted by the KDE project and the French government. They were OddCamp as well. I spoke to them. They were just close to us on the HPR table.
I've interviewed them, Dave.
Yeah.
Good to see you're paying attention, yeah?
Yeah. Well, there's
this channel called HPR.
Yeah. Anyway, I remembered my conversation. If people want to self-host their own home server, they can access the rooms via a federation service. And there are also bridges into many IRC network, if that's a desirable option too. Also, for fun and giggles, Matrix was developed by a telecom provider to sort of replace SIP. As such, you can run voice and video calls, including VR video calls, over Matrix too. It's actually very cool, isn't it? Yeah. There was a talk at OddCamp about not the last one, the one before the Sheffield one, I think. It was quite a good presentation about it, which got a lot of people very interested.
And Brian says, there is a Matrix room, hpr:matrix.org, as it happens, to which I replied, give an ugly link to it. Thursday, December the 7th, 2017. Clatu created and configured this room. Nice one, Clatu.
Long time ago.
Do you want to read Taj's one?
Yeah. It takes me a while to A, find the thing, B, move my mouse, and secondly, get my brain in gear. Anyway, Taj says, just my two cents as far as social media. Really, the only two requirements I have for joining any social media moving forward are that it is FOSS and that it's decentralized. As long as something checks those boxes, I'd be all for trying anything. I know a lot of my interactions on Mastodon are essentially just interactions with HPR folks. So something more centralized might be nice for people who just want a place to hang, kind of like Oddcast Planet was back in the day. I was not aware there was a Matrix room for HPR, and I'll definitely be checking it out. I've only had limited experience with Matrix, but the experiences I have had have been good. I've not heard of Snicket before today, I do miss XMPP though.
And Gorber2 says, I run Prodigy myself. Looks like I'll be migrating over to Snicket. I also wasn't aware of the Matrix Room. Are there plans to make a page with this information, maybe at the top bar, a community button? I see Oddcast Planet mentioned, has there been discussion on ways to funnel users over to there? The link at the bottom of the page redirects to Oddcast Planet Unregistered, which is not very useful for someone new to IRC. I've been on the BinRev IRC servers for years. Do they still run their own IRC servers with a HPR channel? So the Oddcast Planet thing, unregistered, if you don't log in or not authenticated, you get put into this unregistered thing, which I agree is not very helpful. And I think there's a lot of people on other social media things that are not on IRC, but the Matrix has the ability to, Matrix clients has the ability to go to IRC on Freenode. And I wasn't even aware that BinRev had their own IRC server or that there was a HPR channel there. So there you go.
Never heard of it. Yeah. So Snicket's quite good, but it's I was using Gajim, I pronounce it Gajim, to connect to Snicket because I had used that years ago to connect to Google Talk. And that was okay, and I can't remember what else I was using, but yeah, Matrix, I've been using Riot on my phone and on the web client on my desktop, and it's got a lot of good features, and it's obviously being developed quite rapidly, so it certainly seems pretty good.
I ended up wanting to have less places to talk, but now ended up with more places to talk.
Yeah. I felt that it's probably worth checking these out in anticipation of there being a process of people migrating to the one that was best. And there does seem to have been a little bit of that. People have been moving away from Snicket to some degree. In fact, I think Andrew McNallow joined Matrix a day or two back saying, I noticed everybody had disappeared from Snicket, so here I am, or something to that effect. I imagine that's going to be the future. But it's hard to predict. I don't know. Evolution of some sort is going on.
Yeah, I did like the Snicket more because of the freedom of the clients. There's more XMPP clients, but on the other hand, everything has moved now to a web API, which Matrix is using. So, and possibly Matrix will be able to bridge the two. What would be cool is if there was a way to have a Matrix bridging to both, and that way you get everything in the one. That's basically what I want.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I've seen discussions where people said, does it bridge to X? And the answer seems to be, oh, yes, there does seem to be either something already or something being worked on that will do that. So it looks to have potential.
So there was a call for shows. We're very low. We have a few from Ahuka sitting there in the queue, but that's has submitted some series, and we need shows. We've got enough for next week, but after that, we're out. Yes. And just to remind everybody, if there are no shows, we are going to shut down the network. That is the promise that I made. If there are no shows in HPR, then the project has ceased and we shut it down. Yeah, there's no point in syndicating other people's content and trying to keep it going. People are supposed to submit shows. That's the plan. So submit your shows. Thank you. And if you don't know what to submit, the first show is, hi, I am Rachel, and this has been listening to the HPR for years. Never thought I should send in the show, but now here I am, and here's my tech history. And then we will definitely ask you for more shows. That's how it works. It's not a burden sending in shows, is it, Dave?
I don't think it is. I don't, well, no.
Well, tomorrow's episode is the exception, but yes, it's not. It's, you pick up a recorder, you say what you have to say, and you press send. And then you go, oh my God, I hit the sound of my own voice. Yes, we all do. But yeah, come on, get over it. Okay. Kevin Wisher said that the audio quality is a better version, but I didn't see the version. I asked him about it.
Yeah. I think he's developed a better version, but I'm not sure where it is yet.
Okay.
So, yeah, we need to ask him that.
Kevin, send us a link. I did want to mention, in one of the discussions on one of the social medias, and this is now a bit of a problem because I'm now on the HBR channels and we need to bring comments or basically discussions from there into this Community News Show. That's the whole point of the Community News Show. So there has been a lot of discussions. One of the most interesting that related to the community was I was putting out the idea there, should we, when somebody posts a comment to the HBR website, should we post that to our Twitter feed like we do for when shows get submitted to the feed? Should we say there's a new comment, you know, Dave has left a comment on this episode or Bob has left a comment on this episode? And I never for a moment thought that that would be an issue, but some people floated the idea that comments are not public in the same way that something on a web page is public. What do you feel about that, Dave?
Well, the comments on HBR are as public as the shows, aren't they?
Because exactly.
They're attached exactly to the shows. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that a comment has been posted rather than the actual contents of the comment would be, I mean, because we're not posting the shows, we're just posting the fact that there is a show and it's got a title and it's over there.
In fairness, I think the point was about posting it directly to Twitter, so putting it into our Twitter feeds, putting it out to our RSS feeds for Twitter and Fediverse and all those mm-hmm. places. Hey, there's a new comment yeah. on HBR. For one thing, I think it will, right now, if you follow the HBR feed, it's a bit like it looks like a bot is releasing it. And there, it doesn't seem to be alive. Like it's one post a day, a new show has been released, and this is the show. Whereas getting feedback and comments might be something that people would like to have coming onto their Twitter feed or their Fediverse feed or whatever, that there's something trending on that they might actually want to comment about. I don't know. But if there's privacy issues associated with that, then yeah, I'd like to hear about it. What the community's feelings on that whole topic are.
Mm-hmm. The comments are not particularly identifiable, are they? I mean, you can
nope.
post
completely
whatever
random
name you want. But a comment to a show on the show, on the same page as the show, is a different entity than a comment, an entire comment about a show that on Twitter that nobody's actually knows anything about because it's not on Twitter, but links to it are. So I don't know whether that's a particularly valuable Twitter thing.
Yeah, don't know.
No, that's just random chit chat from me. That's all.
And some other stuff we have. Yesterday there's been some activity. Yannick and the Love Bug Dave the Junior. have helped us to set permissions and stuff on the development sites that are gitlab.anonesthost.com. And if you're interested in the development of the new more distributed version of the HBR web presence, then feel free to come and join in the fun that is to be had there.
Yep. Whether we want to be sort of doing a quick summary on these community news shows, I don't know. It depends how things move forward, I guess. But it might be worth something. It might be worth considering.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't know if there's a whole lot to say as yet.
No, that's what I was thinking. We just did some stuff. Maybe as we get a bit further down the road, something about the stuff we did would be of interest.
Yeah, there's no code up there as yet. It's just we've made two repos, HBR front end and a HBR back end. And the whole thing about this is I don't really know where to start, but what I've decided to do is I'm going to, in the HBR front end, I'm going to manually put in the HBR website as it's rendered now. So basically a a mirror of what you would get, but instead of using the database that each of the pages would be in /episode/HPR1234 or whatever. And then the backend stuff would be where the Postgres database is and the tools necessary to interact with the Postgres database in order to, and the templates that would be form the HTML web pages. And then when that's running, the backend would push to the front end, and the front end, you point a web server to it, and then you've got the HPR website. Yeah? That kind of the plan. Now, both the back end and the front end will be totally open to anybody to be able to git clone and pull it down. So if you're interested in the in just getting an up-to-date local copy of the HPR website, you just do a git pull every day, and the modified files that are on the HPR website will be down on your Git repository, and you can just point a web server to that, and you've got yourself a copy of the site. And if you want to act as one of the worker nodes in a janitor nodes, then you pull down the backend one, and then if you've got the credentials to push up to a HPR website, or you wanted to run your own mirror of a HPR website, you could do that as well.
Yes.
That's the plan.
I'm sure there's going to be interesting issues to consider along the way, but the principle of it sounds pretty good.
Yep. Okay. Fine. Anything else, Dave?
Do you want to
talk about tags.
Oh, the tags. Yeah, we had a flurry of tags this month. Claudia Miranda, who committed in public to add the tags to his shows, which didn't have them, having been hassled by tags. That's wonderful. Just go around the rest, please, and hassle some of them. He did contribute his the said tags, and Windigo, who likes to listen to older shows and add tags, which we're eternally grateful. And some geezer called Dave Morris did in total 16 shows this month. We're gradually moving forward. We're just under 600, or about to go under 600, needing attention. So slow but
excellent.
Steady.
Well done, Dave. Well done. And of course, the whole point of this front end back end thing is that you could check out the one of the pages and then submit fixes and stuff and edit your own tags and edit your own shows and push them back. Don't know exactly how that's going to work, but
the ability to fix things on your own show notes, I think, would be very, very, very popular. It's a thing people have asked for many times over the time I've been involved with HBR. I'm quite happy to fix them for them. You know, it gives me something to do here in these endless hours of being retired and stuff. But
rub it in, put your free laptop.
it would be great if you could go and do that sort of stuff. Whether you want to go and edit somebody else's show, we're starting to get into some territory that starts to get a little bit more convoluted. But still. The ability to have.
Yeah, and there's back. Also the question of should you be able to edit your own show? You've released it under the Creative Commons. That version is now out there. And yes, you can take a copy of it and modify it, but should you be able to go back and edit it is a religious question.
There would be a history that said, originally you said, you know, it was black. Now you said it's white. So, you know, which is true. But it's more the case of, you've made some silly mistake in a bit of code that you've submitted, and I really need to fix that because it looks so stupid like that. And
also, this doing this in Git gives you the first complete blame history for what has happened on the page. So
exactly, yes.
Potentially, we could even get to a day where, you know, somebody submits a show via Git push. Anywho, that's the plan. Whether we get time to do it or not is another question.
A lot of busy people involved, busy doing other things, that is. Apart from me, I've got nothing to do.
Let's see, anything happening on the Scale 18 coming up in 2 weeks' time on the 8th? Open Source 101, IDI 2020, never heard of it. PostgreSConf 2020, and the SUSEcon is on. OpenSUSE Summit. That's at the end of next month. And KubeCon and CloudNativeCon EU on the 30th. That might be interesting.
Indeed.
Okay. Are we done, Dave?
I think we're done.
Okay, cool. I'll and apologies to anybody if I've missed your show. I'll make a note while I'm listening to it. And if I've missed anybody's show, apologies, and we'll cover it next month.
Yep, yep. Sorry to leave you in the lurch. Running Debian testing seemed like a good idea one time, but there's a sort of process where Debian SID craps all over our operating system, and then gradually things get cleaned up again. But during the crapped on stage, things get messy, I'm afraid. Anyway.
Okay, cool. Dave, I'll edit this and send it on. I'll post it. All right.
Okay. Great.
Tune in tomorrow for actually what will be an exciting episode, because I spent long enough editing it, of Hacker
Public
Radio.
Whoa.
All right, bye.
Okay, cheers.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.